This isn't your average inspirational podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the Sunny Satya Show on the EA Radio Network. Welcome to the Sunny Satya Show. We have a very special guest here today. I'm absolutely honored and humbled to have someone who has come from a place that most of us will never come from. He's experienced things in life that none of us have experienced. At least, not any of us. A very small percentage of people have experienced. Maybe 0.1% of you that are listening have personally experienced something like he's gone through. And he's not only survived, but he's now changing thousands of lives, and his mission is to help save lives. And my guest today is Mr. Sunny Tutt. Welcome to the show, Sunny.
Thank you, Sunny. Thank you for having me.
It's such an honor to be here with Sunny. Sunny, gosh, we met a number of years ago, and I remember when I met you, you looked like Iron Man because you had some funky device on you, and I'm wondering, is this guy trying to be like Iron Man? And the fact is that Sunny, why don't you tell us, when did I meet you? What was going on when I met you?
That time I met you, and I had, at that time I had it's called a LVAD, a left ventricular assist device, is the official name for it. Just to put it in layman's terms or simple terms, it pretty much was an artificial heart pump. Just like you said, it looks like Iron Man because it has blinking lights, green lights, shiny lights. It's just telling, just like a car, you know, like the dashboard, RPM, and like, you know, how many, you know, liters of blood per minute and everything like that. It was actually, I went into full heart failure. The fortunate thing with our healthcare system is that, even though your heart fails, I mean, they can, use machines to get blood through your body. And this assist device, I had an open heart surgery, and they surgically implanted this LVAD device, tiny device, in the left ventricle. And it literally just flows blood into the heart, physically, directly into it. And the hose comes through outside of your stomach, make a tiny hole in the stomach, into that actual computer device that's around my waist with batteries. And it's just like, you know, having your cell phone, except you can never let it die. You got to constantly charge it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How old were you when you found out that you had this condition?
Actually, I was diagnosed back in 2003 at the age of 18 in my first year of Simon Fraser University. I was really looking forward to it. And, I was on varsity football. I was going to try out for the football team. I was strong, healthy. I could bench 220 pounds. I was able to sprint. I was play football all my life for 12 years. And then all of a sudden, I got hit with this. It's genetic disease. It's in my family. It's the proper name for it is cardiomyopathy. It's a type of congestion heart failure. Basically, to just explain it, it's just when your heart muscle is just dilated, which means like inflamed. It's literally double, triple its size, and it just loses this like total functionality. It's only operating at 15%, so you suffer in terms of like, you know, you're not getting enough blood to your or other organs, so you know you can't breathe because your lungs aren't functioning properly. You right. can't, you know, just everything. Your body is just entirely weak, and just I struggled for 10 to 12 years. And, I was managed with just basic medications. I had the great care from St. Paul's Hospital.
We're gonna talk about all this because there's yeah. so much to talk about.
Sorry, man. Yeah.
No, don't apologize because I know your journey has been a very difficult one, and it's been a long journey.
Long journey. Lots of facts, lots of details.
Guys, I want you guys to turn this up and sit down and listen to this entire interview because what you guys don't realize is that there was a chance that Sunny, there was a high probability that Sunny would make it. And for him to be here right now, sitting at my dining table, you know, we're just so honored and so thankful for all of the blessings. So, guys, imagine this. Imagine, first of all, in this interview, we're going to talk about Sunny's condition. We're going to talk about what he went through. We'll talk about his struggle and then his victory, what he went through at 18 to have his life completely transformed, And now, how many years later? You're how old now?
I'm 31.
31. It took almost
14 years.
Almost, yeah. 13 years. Guys, can you imagine 13 years of waiting for
a new heart?
A new heart. It's such an incredible story. And then, guys, we're going to talk about how important it is and what we can do, what you and I can do to save somebody's life. And so, Sunny, I'd love to start with your story and when you were 18, how that affected you. And, you know, you mentioned SFU. You mentioned you were a varsity football player. And how did life change? What happened? How did you hear the news? How did you take it? What happened?
I was told the news, and it's just a cycle of things. It's just lack of understanding, denial, you know, just hate, anger, mixed emotions. It's brutal. Just imagine you're 18. When you're 18, you're at an age where you just feel like you're invincible. You know everything. And then just derailed when you're told, hey, you know, you got to be on a cocktail medications. You have limitations. You can't do this. And the quality of life just is poor. You can't run. You can't do the things you want to do with your friends. You're just totally limited. You're totally grounded. You literally have, you know, your shoes and cement blocks. And that's physically and metaphor as well. I couldn't, you know, run and, you know, climb up flights of stairs like I used to. And it was like that for a long time. I don't know why, but I felt embarrassed, or I felt like if I told people, they would judge me, or like my friends, or it was a mixture of not having people feel sympathy for me. And so a lot of my close friends, I never even, you know, told them about my condition. I mean, when you saw the machine, I even told you I have a condition. When we first met, we met a couple of times before that through to mm-hmm. our mutual friends, and I never mentioned to you that I was sick. You never know that. I kept it hidden for a long time because it is a hidden disability.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just totally changed me. And then I was through years of denial, just like I even, you know, I didn't follow the regimen I was supposed to. You know, St. Paul's Hospital recommended, the pre-heart transplant clinic recommended, you know, because I just denial, I'd miss appointments. And even to the point, even when up to 20, I wasn't following everything I was saying. Because you were just, I was young, I was stupid. Even regular teenagers and stuff, they'd make mistakes and stuff. But
what immediately changed for you? So you found out when you were 18. What was the first immediate change that you had to make?
First immediate change, I dropped out of SFU. Mm. I was in the hospital first of all for the month. I had to, you know, vacate that semester, and then I didn't go back. My parents were like, you know what, just take this 1 year to rest and recover. And you know, my dad's was a little bit backwards. He's just hoping, you know what, you know, like God will kind of bless you and you'll get better. But I mean, it wasn't really the case. You know, I always had faith I'll get better, but you can't imagine better from this.
Right.
And I waited for the answer for years. And that was the immediate thing, that my life was just put on hold for many years. And, you know, fortunately my family is like, we're self-employed. So they kind of, I'd help out and they employ me a little bit just for like odd things, you know, like bookkeeping for our trucking business, or like, you know, working at the desk at our motel business or something, you know, just to prevent me from going crazy or going to depression, try to just keep me normal as possible. But really there's a lot of things that young guys want to do that I couldn't do. I was really sheltered. And, you know, but, I try to make the best of it and not tell people and try to do a lot of things normal people would do. But that was the immediate thing. Just my life was on hold. And I felt like my life was just on hold. And I'm just a temporary stance just for like 12 years. And I was just waiting for some answer. And finally, things just got worse, right? I mean, to the point where I went into that machine. And I had like at least 3 or 4 close-death experiences. I've had like in between, I had like 2 or 3 cardiac arrests. Two of them actually happened while I was at the hospital at the appointment. So I was lucky that happened there and that they saved my life and resuscitated me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, so 13 years.
13 years, man.
Yeah. You waited 13 years for your heart.
That's and correct.
You guys have no idea how ambitious this guy is and how driven he is and the stuff he was doing during these 13 years. Tell us about some of the activities you were doing and what happened. What else did you experience during those 13 years in your life besides those?
Well, I was sick. I was on a regimen of medications and seeing the doctors. Once I accepted it, I accepted it at a certain point around 21, 22. I accepted it because I had a near death thing and it just hit me and I had to accept it. And from then on, I just tried to really pitch in my family businesses and everything. And, I tried to go back to school, but I just couldn't concentrate. The medications would kind of, some for like for blood pressure, some were for this or that, or for like heart, reducing your heart rate. So it's not putting pressure on that weak heart. And so a lot of medications would make it terrible for like memory and stuff. It was difficult to focus. So I left the school thing. I'm like, I guess the only thing I could do is really just be part of, you know, my family businesses. And so I took a part in that, tried to live somewhat of a normal life. And I really got good. I got involved really well. And then, in, 2010, just after Olympics, I lost my father to, well, it's irony, it's a heart failure. He passed away in India. And then it was a big loss. It was just indescribable. When it happened, even when I found out the morning, I had to go. I went into the motel. I was currently renovating two of our rooms, and I had to just go about my day. Like, even though this news, this crashing news, I should have halted everything, but no, I kept going because I had tradesmen waiting for materials and supplies. I went and I'm going. I had to just be like the sad clown, I guess. You know, I'm upset and sad on the inside, but I have to be happy and just move forward on the outside. And me and my mom, we really just kept strong. We kept trying to keep everything alive. We and my other three siblings just kept supporting them. You know, they're all private school taught and everything. We try to get them the best education, and you know, private school isn't cheap, and we had a lot of overhead for our businesses, but we came across that, and I really pushed hard, and I guess that all that effort and time, I guess maybe, I don't know what it is, I guess maybe it's inevitable that my heart was just going to give out at some point, because doctors have told me, like, you know, your heart's only good for maybe 5 years, Sonny, you are inevitably and eventually going to need a heart transplant. They were shocked that I was able to drag 12 to 13 years out of that weak heart.
Wow.
Weak heart, yeah. They were just amazed. And at some point then in 2013, it just started my capacity physically and just like my, you know, willing to do things. It just dissipated because it just, my heart function dropped to about 10%, 12%. I couldn't move and everything. I couldn't do anything. And, you know, I'll bring up that personal story with you. So I kind of knew it, that I felt like my end was near. It was just like, I had my, you know, bi-monthly appointments at St. Paul's pre-heart transplant clinic. Well, I'm very grateful to. They offered me the greatest care, the heart clinic at St. Paul's. But just from the news and what, and I didn't think I would get a heart. You know, I was afraid of the concept of a heart transplant. People think like a heart transplant, even when people tell me, I see now and I tell them, yeah, I'm a heart transplant recipient. A heart transplant, people think, how is that possible? How do you take a heart out and how do you put it out? You know what? It's just amazing. It's called bypass. You know, there's machines that keep you going without a heart. I mean, right. When I was younger, I didn't understand that. But it's just amazing. But at that point, I thought, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make a heart. So I always had this dream car. I don't know if a lot of you guys like grew up, like I graduated in 2002, but Gone in 60 Seconds was a very popular movie in the 2000s. And I always wanted to get that Eleanor, that 1967 Shelby Mustang. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, I don't know how long it'll be wrong. I want to have my dream car. I bought one. And I'm like, you know, let me enjoy it. I mean, some people have, guys have, older men have like a midlife crisis. This is kind of like, I guess, my end life crisis. So we bought the car. You remember it? That shiny.
I do. It was gorgeous.
Gorgeous. I love that thing. But you know, I didn't even get a chance to drive it. It needed a little bit of work when I got it. And then, unfortunately, my health just totally just went downhill from there. I didn't even get a chance to enjoy it. And then that's where you came in. I asked you from friend to friend, please, can you help me get rid of it, sell it? I didn't have the mental ability, the physical ability to deal with it. I needed to make that money that I spent liquid to leave for my family and not leave them in any, you know, with any problems. Because my mom's and me alone with three other siblings. And so I sold the car.
Yeah.
You helped me sell the car. And I appreciated that day. I physically can do anything. I'm so thankful to you. And I'm humbled to be here today. I thank you so much for this opportunity.
Of course. No, it's an honor to have you here. It's just so inspiring. You have no idea how many people right now, I think, or like me, I'm just sitting on the edge of my seat right now in shock. And even though I've known you for so long, every time I hear your story, it just sends chills, down my back thinking about how much. I mean, you had two cardiac arrests. You lost your dad.
Mm-hmm.
you still hustled every day at your family business to ensure that your family was taken care of. And then you got blessed. And then there was this massive blessing. Tell us about that.
Which massive blessing? You want to talk about the transplant? I've had many massive blessings. I was finally... I got the, after I had that artificial heart machine. That was the first blessing, first of all. I had to get the surgery, otherwise my heart was going to fail. I got the artificial heart pump implanted. So I went to surgery, and you know what? They told me that, you know, you're going to have... There's a chance you won't make it because you're just so weak. I was in the hospital in 2013, for 3-4 months straight. Mm. I mean, they would let me go. They thought I was okay. They gave me IV treatment to boost the strength of the heart, sent me home for a day. But when I got home, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't lay flat. I just couldn't. I go back. Same cycle happened 2-3 times. So three months where maybe in those 3 months, 4 days ago, I went home. Finally, like, Sonny, that's it, the end is near, right? And then finally said, you know what, there's this LVAD, and I was very afraid. And they introduced me to this really great guy. He went through it all. He had the LVAD, and he was a transplant, heart transplant recipient. He survived the transplant, and he's of the same community as me, South Asian. His name is Jazz Oberoi. I'm mentioning him because this is a guy that really, really influenced me. He gave me that confidence. I was so afraid of this operation. You just imagine that you have a machine inside you, and they say you're gonna have a hose coming out of your belly, just 3 inches from the on the right side of your belly button. You're gonna have a pipe coming out, like it's called the drive line. That's the powers the heart pump into, you know, the thing you wear on your waist to power it. And you just imagine that. You know, I was just afraid. And they introduced me. He came to see my bedside, and this guy looked like such a healthy guy. He had full energy. I mean, I had to take like deep breaths in between, you know, every couple words in a sentence to speak. That's how ill I was. I was in bed. I couldn't get up. And I saw him, and he was so, you know, full of life. He had color. He wasn't pale like me. He had color. And he told me, you know, he said, Sonny, you know what? Look at me. I had the LVAD. I had the same LVAD. I had the heart transplant. I had the same condition as you. Cardiomyopathy. For me, it's a genetic problem too. My family has it. My cousins have it. Just like me. And I was like, you know what? Maybe there is hope. This is kind of like a guy that just is going through what I'm going through, right? Just a year before me. And you know, we're friends today. We're good friends today. And it gave me that confidence. And I think, you know, when you're going through a surgery afraid and without confidence, I think that affects your outcome. And you know what? I woke up after that operation. I mean, I was afraid going in. But after that, it gave me a boost of confidence. And I wasn't as afraid. I was still worried. I mean, still, it's an open heart surgery, right? And when I woke up, I was just so happy. And I woke up and I saw my my girlfriend, who's my fiance, to my right, my mother, my sister, everybody around me, and my brother. And they're calling me out. At first, I was like, is this a dream? Did I make it? And they're like, yeah, you made it. And I was just so happy, so happy. Wow. So, yeah.
Wow.
That was just the first one with the artificial heart, man. Yeah.
That was just the first step. That wasn't even the transplant. That was just getting the artificial heart just to keep you going.
Just to keep you going, man. Yeah.
That's when you became Iron Man, right?
That's when I became Iron Man with the lights.
That was that time.
Yeah. It was funny with that thing, man. You know, it's such a great conversation starter, that thing. I mean, I went to, first time going out, I went with my fiance out to the Comedy Mix downtown. So we're going to the comedy club. The bouncer, like, I mean, it's hard to hide this thing. It's big, right? It comes up. It's like wearing, like, you know, those 1990s little pump bags, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's got green lights. And the guy's like, you know, he's like, you know, excuse me, language. He goes, what the hell is that? He freaked out, right? Thinking I was like, maybe, like, you know, someone bringing in a bomb in or something like that. And then, you know, it's not their fault, right? I mean, it's just lack of education, lack of understanding, you know? I mean, and I just had to tell him, like, it's kind of hard to just go and explain, hey, this is a left ventricle, you know, advice, whatever it is, right? I just told him straight up, you know, it's artificial heart pump. I'm waiting for a transplant. Oh, okay, go right ahead, you know. And then just to make the mood lighter, he's like, oh, don't laugh too hard, you know. You don't want those RPMs going up higher, heart rate up, you know.
Right.
But it felt good. And I lived about normally. I lived like it was a normal life for 9 months. It was great, you know. I felt great. I had an instant 25% boost in my heart function. So I was able to, you know, go walk. It felt great. I remember my friend took me out for a Canucks game. I mean, he works downtown. He works for a major firm. He had free tickets. Let's go. And you know what? I was amazed myself. It was the first time I walked 25, 35 blocks, you know, from his office to the stadium. And then we went out to Neasley's in Gastown, the great great pizza place. We walked. It was like 40. It was like almost like 5 kilometers of walking. Wow. I was amazed at myself on this machine. It kept me going.
So you were still only at about 40%.
Yeah, about 35%. Yeah, heart function. Yeah, at that yeah. Point. Yeah, from 25% boost at 35. And I'm feeling great. Wow. The EF, yeah. I mean, normal person's EF is called ejection fraction. It's about 65 to 75, right? That's mm-hmm. for everybody. I mean, the highest can be 75 is EF. That's what it's called.
Man, so take us through, like, how did you feel when you were told that the end is coming? What was your thought process then?
At the back, when they told me, you know what, like, I felt as if the end is coming. I mean, those aren't the exact doctor's words. That's just my interpretation. But, like, you know, Sonny, you're going to need this open heart. Your heart's given out.
Right.
My kidneys started failing because the organs were getting blood. My creatinine level, which is like your kidney function, was just at almost like complete failure. Just like literally one step away from dialysis. My liver function was dropping. You know, a lot of it, they weren't telling me. They were telling my family. And then, you know, now that I'm all good now, my family tells me like the reality of it, what doctors are telling them. Right. They tell me now that, you know, it's like we almost lost you. And it hits me even more now. And I'm just so grateful for that, you know. And we'll get to my mission after if there's any more questions.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So now that you've got the pump.
Yeah.
What happens next? So what year are we in? We're in 2013 now?
This is, yeah, about 2013, mid-2013. So I was, after I received the pump, and then I was given a pager. I was officially listed on the transplant list. BC Transplant is in charge of that. It works along with whatever hospitals do the transplant. So St. Paul's. St. Paul's specializes in heart transplants. They're on Burrard Street downtown, and it's the only hospital in downtown Vancouver. But and then VGH does, like, you know, other ones like, you know, kidney and liver transplants, right? Yeah. And so I was waiting for I had the pager. I was just waiting for that call. So I had my LVAD installed like December 2013. And so I lived my life like normal. I mean, the only difficult thing was just like showering with that thing because you have to cover it up. You got to put in a special bag. You got to get like, you know, plastic wrap and cover up that wound. That's the only thing, which is, that's the other thing. I'm very thankful for my family, my fiance. They helped me through all these hard times and hardships. But after that 9 months, it was just going along, living my normal life. I was doing all the things I really couldn't do before. And then I got that call. It was late night, July 17th. Actually, I was helping my fiance Manpreet. She was packing to leave for Vegas with her friends. And, you know, she was just going with her friends on a trip. And we were hacking in. And in the middle of it, she came by to see me. We were hanging out before she was going. And I got a call. My beeper went, and I got a call on my cell phone. I was like, oh, here it is. You know, the beeper went off. It was just, you know, they do tests every Tuesday to check your beeper. Right. But this came on, you know, a Friday night. And and I answered it. I was like, hello. It was my nurse, Wynn. And she goes, Sonny, we got a heart.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, wow. And you know what? The first moment was excitement. And then right away, we were just jumping up. Like, oh, my God. It was panic kind of at the moment because you're thinking, oh, we gotta run down there. Because for hearts, there's a small turnaround. I mean, it's only good for so many hours. But she said, no, don't take your time. Take your time coming down here. It's not ready yet, but we have a candidate. Just come down. And then, you know, I felt guilty. I'm like, no, I don't want to ruin your trip. You know, just go on the trip. I mean, because there's a chance it might be a dry run. They treat it as if you're going to come in for a transplant. But sometimes when they still want you to come, they prep you. They put your IVs on you. They put the gown in. They will scrub you down. They keep testing that heart up until the surgery. So if they find any inkling, any chance of it not being a viable you know, organ for you, then they totally call it off. It's called a, you know, a cold run or whatever. It just, you know, it doesn't happen. So telling it might be a cold run. Just don't cancel the trip for me.
Right.
And you know, she's very selfless. Like, how can I do that? I'm going to miss this trip. My friends understand. I'm like, we're so petty. We argued about that for a couple of minutes. I'm like, okay, we'll go. And, my mom wasn't there that night. She was staying with my brother. He lives in Vancouver where he goes to private school in St. George's, and she was there staying the night with him. So, you know, I wanted to get down to the hospital. So we drove together. Before I left, I burnt the CD. I went and kind of just had some songs that I, you know, kind of bought and downloaded and made a CD. I'm like, just in case this is like the last time, burnt my favorite CD and hopped in the Range Rover, and we listened to all the tunes and just enjoyed our drive because we had time. We enjoyed our drive to downtown, took our time, talked, listened to music, you know, and just everything. And that nice conversation on the way. Part took her time in. And, you know, I would like to have my last meal, but, you know, right when you get the call and say, all right, you got to stop immediately drinking, eating.
Right.
And, yeah, we went in and then just, we waited and waited, and, they prepped me, my family joined me. And then, by morning, cause this was nighttime, midnight went down, and by morning, they just prepped me, took me in, and, I said goodbye to everybody and I went in for the transplant.
Wow. All within less than 24 hours.
All within less 24 hours, yeah. So it happened on July 18th of 2014, my successful transplant. Same thing with the other. I woke up, my family's around me. I'm like, is this a dream? Did it work? First thing I actually said was to my mom. I said it in our, you know, native tongue, in Punjabi. I was like, Mom, I'm like, you know, is everything okay? Did it work? I said, did it work? She goes, I don't know why I said those words. Right? That's what they tell me. I don't remember anything. They right. give you this anesthesia that just your memory is kind of very hazy. But I remember that part. But I'm like, you know, did it work? And she goes, yes, it worked. You're good, you know? And the transplant, normally they're about 7 to 9 hours. My transplant took 12 hours.
Wow.
Took a very long time. Because taking out my old heart, they took a long time. My heart was so enlarged because that's the disease, the cardiomyopathy, is enlarged heart, dilated heart. It was so large. They had to just like kind of stretch it and pull it out. I hate to get graphic, guys. Sorry to listeners that are not liking this, but they were just pulling it out. It took a long time. It's just, you know, huge, this heart, you know. It's heart's supposed to be like the size of like your fist when you're closed, right? Mm-hmm. This thing's like the size of a freaking full-size chicken.
Wow.
And they're pulling it out. And, you know, when they put the new one in, it was literally like, you know, a pea in a tin can, you know, because like all the other organs are just moved around. And then there's like huge space where the heart went to the new one. And yeah, everything was successful. Everything went great.
Unreal.
I woke up with, and when I woke up and even 2 days later, I felt this great energy in my body. I wouldn't stop smiling. I wouldn't stop laughing and talking. When I had my first one, the first open heart with the LVAD, even after that surgery, I couldn't talk. I was so weak after that. I was in the hospital even for another month. But with this one, by like day six, I was like, can I go home? I feel so good. I want to go. My friends would come and I just wouldn't stop talking and laughing. I felt all this energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from just having a full functioning heart.
Mm-hmm.
I had this immense energy. You know what? It's immense energy. And you know, I was just telling the nurses, I'm like, you know what? My friends here, they just want to go to the Cactus Club down the street. Can I get a day pass and go? I just wanted to get out so bad.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, son, we can't let you go. It's only day six. But they, you know what? They saw like how well I was doing and how eager I was. They gave me a day pass on day seven. I went home during the day. And it was summertime, you know, July. And my friends came over and they all, you know, met me. We just sat. We have a nice backyard, you know, patio and everything, pond, and we just kind of talked. And we were just happy to see me. I went home with day pass. I'd come in back at nighttime to sleep.
Right.
And then the next day, I had day pass. And finally, day nine, they're like, Sonny, you can go home. I came home from heart transplant within 9 days, laughing, walking, talking, feeling great.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That is so inspiring. And I want to recognize a couple of things. Firstly, who is this woman that stood by you all these years? And what was that like to have this, and I know exactly who she is because I've had a chance to spend so much time with her, and she's incredible. And tell me about what was that like to have somebody right next to you and stick by you through all this?
You know what, I couldn't imagine it if I didn't have that support network around me. I mean, you know, I'm so fortunate that I had such a great woman on my side. I was just, you know, it's, you know what, I really realize, even as we're talking, because I'm thinking in the moment, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm so grateful. I can't believe it stuck around. You know what, I even in the beginning, when I first asked her, I was like, you know, this is it. I have this, you know, issue, this disease. When I met her like 5 years ago, I'm like, I have this disease. And, you know, if you want an out, you have an out. You know, some people just kind of like, you know, get afraid or they don't want to have had that in the past. That's how it is. Unfortunately, that's how it is. You know, some people are, I don't want to say they're bad people, but, you know, they just lack understanding or they're afraid, or some are just superficial, unfortunately. But you know what? From day one, she supported me. And it wasn't like, she felt sympathy for me, and that's why she no, like, I mean, she was different. And back to when I tell in the beginning, I didn't tell my friends because in the beginning I hid the condition because I just didn't want that sympathy. I don't want to be treated differently. But she never did. She'd care for me when I needed that help. When I was very ill, she would care for me. She was so understanding, you know, and, you know, it's, I don't have the words to describe it, but she's like most amazing woman in my life, you know. But, you know, I don't want to take anything away from my family, my mother, my mom has been so supportive. And my sisters, all amazing women.
Absolutely.
And my younger brother. And you know what? I wish my father was around to see this. And I mean, he was worried. I wish he could have seeked the same health services that we have here. I mean, Canada is just such a great country. We're so fortunate to have our healthcare and, you know, BC Transplant and all these people. That, you know, just in general, the doctors here, the facilities are amazing. And, you know, if my father wasn't just in India at the time, I mean, he could have received the care that he deserved. You know, his whole entire life, he's contributed so much to tax dollars. It would have been nice to just him for to see that used on him to get that care. But, yeah, that's a different conversation. But you know what? I'm just so grateful for my family and my fiance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She deserves so much praise. And that's awesome. Now, second thing that I want to bring up is this heart you received. And the only way that you received this heart is because another human being, while they're alive, planned and thought that, you know what, after I pass away, my body's useless to me now. However, my body is so useful to another.
That's right.
And that another human being, without even knowing you, had already planned to save your life.
That's right.
Without even knowing you.
That's right, yeah.
So, what, first of all, do you know who this person is?
Unfortunately, I don't. BC Transplant has set these guidelines. They keep it anonymous. It's just to protect both parties, the recipient and the donor family. I mean, we're allowed to, like, write to each other. Like, I'm still... You know, they say you wait for after the year or two mark because the family's probably grieving, and you're allowed to send a letter. BC Transplant facilitates a letter to be sent, and it's strictly anonymous. And you know what? I try to come up with a thank you letter this past Christmas. I'm thinking it would be nice for the year, but you know, it's been a year and a half. I thought, you know what? I think about, because I've went through that loss, lost my father, and you know, I didn't really get over it probably until after the 2 year mark. Until like it's true what they say, you know, time heals. And I've come up with a kind of a draft, but, you know, I just feel like it wasn't enough. I'm going to work on that. But, no, I don't know the family. I wish I did. But, like I said, it's just a guideline set by BC Transplant. It's just to create safety for both parties and just anonymous, keeping it, you know, anonymous for both. And they're a great organization. I mean, totally. Whatever they do is they do it for a reason.
So how does this work? So you got this heart.
Yes, I got this.
From a donor. So this person, do you know how old was it? Had to be a man.
It was a male. It was a 25-year-old male.
Yeah. So
I'm 31. I have a 25-year-old heart beating in me. I'm younger than you now, Sonny. You, even more younger than you, Sonny.
You got a young... Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah. You got a 25-year-old heart, this 25-year-old male, signed off as an organ donor. Is that how it works?
Yeah, they any time in their life, I don't know exactly when they signed up as an organ donor, but they signed up as an organ donor. It could have been just, you know, you can sign up. I mean, usually when you, let's say, when you renew your license or you get your new driver's license, so sometimes they have it at ICBC motor vehicle branches. You can just sign up there. That's the problem with this, signing organ. Sometimes it's not accessible. A lot of people want to, or a lot of people just don't understand it. They can't. But you can just do it online, even bctransplant.ca. It's just as simple as just having your care card and just your basic ID.
So just some facts, right? And
sure.
I know we can talk about this for hours because,
yeah.
And I'm sure all of you listening right now are, again, inspired to just be alive and inspired to just be thankful for all you've got right now. Because we complain about so much little shit all the time, you know, when life gets put into perspective. Like it had for you at 18, and you waited 13 years. You put your life on pause for 13 years until you can resume a normal life.
That's correct.
I don't think any of us have have the right to complain or have the right to not live each day, you know, as a gift, like what you're doing now. So look, I think that that there's a huge opportunity for everybody in every community, and in our community, in the South Asian community, we were chatting, and you were telling me that there's only a 4% chance of finding a donor if you're South Asian.
That's correct. You know, it's just that, you know, in order to have a successful transplant, organ transplant, or a viable organ, I mean, you know, the donor and recipient need to share like the same blood type. And there's other details too, but the main thing is the blood type. And, you know, it's just the blood types are kind of, there's different blood types for each ethnic group. But for South Asians, we're mostly type B. And, you know, what it is just in the South Asian community, there's just, you know, there's a lack of understanding. You know, there's these cultural myths and beliefs, misconceptions about it. And I mean, it's not all people have negativity towards it, but sometimes it's just not accessible. And there's not as many South Asian organ donors. And so that's why it's that really staggering stat. If you're a South Asian, there's only a 4% chance that you'll find a donor.
So here's what's really exciting, guys. And here's what's, again, super inspiring. And Sunny just keeps on giving. Like, the guy is so incredible. And again, Sunny has started a movement, and he's going to tell you about this movement, what it's called, who he started it with, why he started it, what the mission is, and how all of us can contribute in a way that's not going to, it's not going to cost us anything right now, and it's going to give, potentially give someone a life. So Sunny, please tell us about this organization that you've started now.
Well, so the name of the organization is Jivana Organ Donation Society. Jivana is just a Sanskrit word meaning give life. And I started this organization with three other transplant recipients. And one of them is Jazz Oberoi, who I mentioned earlier, who is a heart transplant recipient, who gave me that confidence. And I really want him to be part of this journey. And we both want to get back to the community in some way and create awareness. And then along the way, I met, it's actually a family friend of mine who had a liver transplant a year ago. And he introduced me, his name is Jag Gill. He introduced me to a friend of his who had a liver transplant 13 years ago, Jazz Gill. Very good guys. I'm very like-minded. We all had the same goals, and you know, we knew that, you know what, there's a lacking in our community, understanding, and just like, you know, to just signing up as organ donors. And you know, we wanted to just create an organization, and we thought we'd just give it this type of name so it's kind of more friendly to the South Asian community. I mean, we work alongside, we have the blessing of BC Transplant, and we created this one to identify more of a South Asians, and we're trying to brand ourselves and, you know, get out there, trying to create awareness. And just want to explain the importance of organ donation. You know, we just want to educate people on the transplant process so they understand how it is. And we just want to eliminate these cultural beliefs, myths, and misconceptions in our community. And, you know, it's the main reason, you know, which causes them to, you know, this prevents them from signing up in the first place. And also we want to just create more opportunities to make it accessible to sign up as an organ donor. And, you know, and just we've been through these obstacles and difficulties ourselves. And we're actually, like, four of us are physical examples of it. Actually, we're four different stories. It's not just me, but I mean, these other three gentlemen have great stories, tremendous stories of their struggle.
Absolutely.
And we just want to, that's why us four got together to create this organization, founded by us four transplant recipients.
Okay. So here's the importance, guys. Here's the importance of this, that without a donor, if Sunny had no donor, he would not be sitting here today.
I wouldn't, no.
If the founders, the other three founders of Jivana, if they did not have a donor, they would not be where they are today. Who can be an organ donor, Sunny? Let's just get through a couple of really basic questions, and then we'll give them the information about where they can go to find out more and where they can register. So first of all, what is an organ donation? What does that mean?
So it's a donation of like biological tissue or an organ of a human body. And it's from a living person. You can do live organ donation. So for example, you can give up one kidney or just even like a piece of a liver. Or there's the office one, like the one I had from a diseased person to a living person. Like when I had the heart transplant, someone had to, unfortunately, okay. So device.
Either you can be alive and you can give an organ that, you know, like a kidney or such, mm-hmm. or for someone that's passed away, they can donate to a living person. Perfect. Yes. Who can donate? Who can be an organ donor?
Anyone can be an organ donor, even if it's someone who has a medical condition. Specialists will determine your ability to donate, but okay. anybody can.
Perfect. Now, I know that people might have these fears that, hey, if I'm in an accident or if something's wrong and my life's on the line, if the doctors know that I'm an organ donor, will they try to save my life?
That's a very common fear, and people – that's a great question. You know what? If you are sick or injured, absolutely yes. The first and foremost duty of healthcare professionals is to provide your care and to save your life, no matter if you're registered or not. Okay. And you're only considered for organ donation after all like life-saving attempts have been made and they've exhausted every, you know, way possible to try to save you. And not only that, this BC's Human Tissue Gift Act states that two individual doctors must declare the death of a potential organ donor independent of the transplant before they even make you viable for a donor.
Got it. So the chances of somebody being a donor are actually extremely slim. So even if you register as a donor, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a donor.
No, it doesn't.
It's a very small chance.
Very small chance.
A very small chance.
Very slim, yes. You live a full life, a healthy life. To 80, 90. I hope we all live long lives.
Got it.
It's only a very slim chance.
So what are the stats? Because, you know, if people are thinking, if I register, does that mean that I'll be a donor?
No. Only 1% of deaths in BC occur in a way that would permit the person to be an organ donor. And to become a deceased organ donor in BC, person must be on life support in a critical care unit with no possibility of recovery. It's very slim.
Got it. So you've got to be in a critical – got it. So chances of any of us being donors are very slim. However, you know, if there's a million people that are donors and 1% get the opportunity, that is all thousands of lives saved.
Exactly.
So where can our listeners find more information and where can they register to become an organ donor?
Okay, so if they want any more information, you can visit our website at www.jivanalife.org. They can also follow us on Facebook. We post articles and we have a lot of information on there. Just look at us on Facebook, Jivana Organ Donation Society. And, you know, if you even want more information, bctransplant.ca. And you can sign up directly on bctransplant.ca. I mean, like working alongside them. Or you can go to our website, JivanaLife.org.
That's JivanaLife.org.
That's correct.
Awesome. Sonny, it's even though you and I are friends, great friends, it's always so inspiring to hear your story.
Thank you, brother.
And there's so much that there's so much that I learned about you today and that I have so much respect for you, an incredible amount, and I think that all of our listeners as well are definitely inspired, definitely moved to live, truly live, and be thankful for everything that we have right now in our lives. And as well, guys, I urge every one of you to please become an organ donor. You've got nothing to lose.
Nothing.
Except a life to save.
I just want to make an announcement as well. So March 13th of 2016, the next Sunday, we have a soft launch at the Strawberry Hill Library. We got the conference room from 3 to 5. And so we're just looking for anybody who wants to be advocates or sponsors or anybody even who just wants to volunteer. They can meet us there at Strawberry Hill on March the 13th between 3 and 5. And if they want any more information, they can call me directly. My phone number is 604-644-4430. And you can also email me at sunnytutt@hotmail.com. That's SunnyTutt at hotmail.com. And please, if you could just, you know, go on Facebook, like us, follow us, Jivana Organ Donation Society, Jivana, J-I-V-A-N-A, Organ Donation Society. And please check our website, jivanalife.org.
Awesome. Thanks again, Sonny.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure and an honor. And I look forward to catching up with you again on our show in a few months to see how far Jivana's come.
So thank you so much for the opportunity and your time. I appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure. Take care.
You too. Hope you enjoyed the show. Let's stay connected. Find me on Facebook at Sonny Satya and check out my website at sonnysatya.com.